From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The Trump administration is making it easier to deport immigrants protected by the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. Last week, an immigration branch of the Department of Justice ruled that being a DACA recipient is not enough to be protected. This coincides with an increase of immigration enforcement against DACA recipients. Current numbers are difficult to track down, but in a letter to senators earlier this year, then Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem said that between January and November of last year, 261 DACA recipients were arrested and 86 were removed from the country. And we've been seeing the effects of this change in enforcement here locally. Last month, a judge ruled that an Atomic woman and DACA recipient was wrongfully deported to Mexico and has since returned to Sacramento. In response to our reporting on that case, the Department of Homeland Security sent us a statement saying that, quote, DACA does not confer any form of legal status in this country. Any illegal alien who is a DACA recipient may be subject to arrest and deportation for a number of reasons, including if they've committed a crime. Cap Radio State House and politics reporter Gerardo Zavala has been following the story of another local DACA recipient, Daniela Valladares Hernandez, whose immigration case was reopened last month, and how her story fits into the larger picture of the Trump administration's immigration enforcement. Welcome back, Gerardo.
Thanks for having me, Vicky.
Okay, so share with us a little bit of the details of Daniela's journey and the circumstances as to which she arrived in the United States as a child.
Yeah, so her journey started in Honduras, where she was fleeing persecution from the government. She was 6 years old at the time and was obsessed with Dora the Explorer. And she told me that she traveled with strangers who tried to make the journey easier for her by telling her the journey was like a Dora episode.
They drew me a map the same way Dora had. I had a little purple book bag. I had my orange shorts. And I knew that as I embarked on the journey by foot, that the final destination and the star where I was going to be safe was the U.S.
She also told me that she carried two Barbie dolls the entire trip, refusing to let them go, even after nearly drowning crossing the Rio Grande into Texas.
I just remember seeing the bright lights from the patrol officers surrounding us, and I was gripping to two Barbies I had on the journey. There were the Swan Lake Princess and Rapunzel, but my innocence and childhood, I left them at the border the moment those Barbies were dropped, and I was handcuffed and put behind bars.
Okay, so she was a young child, an unaccompanied minor. What happened next?
So she moved to Georgia to stay with family, and, you know, she'd stay there through high school. She applied for DACA early into the program's existence and had her case administratively closed in 2014, which essentially placed her case on pause.
Okay, and that case is her crossing the border illegally.
Exactly.
Okay, so remind us what DACA is.
So DACA stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. It's an Obama-era program. It currently shields over 500,000 immigrants brought to the U.S. as children from deportation. The program has been under attack for many years, but it is important to note that DACA does not actually provide legal status or a pathway to a green card. Anyone in the DACA program would have to go through the same process to get a green card as any other undocumented immigrant. That can be marriage to a U.S. citizen, family relationship, or in some cases, even a job sponsorship.
Yeah, and what DACA does offer is the ability to, you know, go to college, to apply for a job, and to be able to live, work, and educate yourself here in the country.
Yes, exactly. And that's what Daniela has actually been doing, you know, since she got here. Her family was located in Georgia, so she grew up there, and she excelled academically pretty much from the moment she arrived as a first grader. She told me that she learned English quickly because she wanted to understand what was going on and was fighting for a place to belong.
I knew that the only way to possibly be able to stay here was through academic excellence, was through ensuring that I wasn't average, but the best, because that is... I was trying to live up and achieve the American dream.
And she always felt like Georgia didn't want her. One example she told me was a high school counselor she went to when she was trying to get into some good colleges. Daniela says the counselor was the first person she shared her background with.
She immediately told me that I was never meant to be here to begin with, and that my best shot at college, if any, was online college. She also asked me if I had a social security number, and went as far as asking me if that was mine, because if it wasn't, that was a federal crime and she could call ICE to come and detain me. And so from that, I understood I didn't have support from my school. And despite that, I still needed to find a way to go to college.
Daniela was eventually nominated for a scholarship called PASI, which led her to join an organization called HOPE, the Hispanic Organization Promoting Education, whose goal was to increase high school graduation rates among Latino students. That led her to getting accepted to George Washington University and then eventually to graduating magna cum laude from Cornell University.
Okay, so why and when did she move to California?
Yeah, she actually did some internships in the Bay Area while she was still going to Cornell. So when she got the opportunity to move here a little over 4 years ago, she jumped on it.
When I first came to San Francisco as a freshman, I absolutely loved it. And I told myself that I was going to make California my home. And straight out of college, I was able to go ahead and do that.
And Daniela's story isn't unique. In your reporting, you talk with someone from the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and they have seen an increase in DACA recipients like Daniela being placed in deportation proceedings. Recently on Insight, we talked about the case of Maria de Jesus Estrada Huertas, a Natomas woman and DACA recipient who a judge ruled was wrongfully deported, has since returned to Sacramento. So what did the lawyer you spoke with attribute this rise in DACA recipients being put into deportation proceedings?
So I spoke to Greg Chen with the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and he told me that the shift we're seeing is part of a broader pattern of immigration courts changing how they operate. The biggest shift he's seen comes from the increased pressure being put on judges to move cases quickly and to rule in favor of the government, which typically means more deportations.
Putting pressure on a judge to move forward on every case that comes before them doesn't necessarily make the courts more efficient, and is also likely to result in highly inconsistent results that are not consistent with the law.
Okay, but what is the argument of the Trump administration?
So the Department of Homeland Security has criticized the program, saying it does not give undocumented immigrants legal status in the country. However, as I noted earlier, that is true. The program does not provide legal status. It just provides protection from deportation. They've previously signaled that DACA recipients can be deported if they've committed a crime. However, many of the people they are targeting, including Daniela, don't have a criminal record.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with CAP Radio reporter Gerardo Zavala about the story of Daniela Valladares Hernandez, a local DACA recipient whose immigration case was reopened last month. Okay, so back in March last month, Daniela received a letter saying that her case was being reopened and she had to appear in court thousands of miles away in Georgia. How did she respond?
She immediately requested a change of venue to a court in Sacramento. When that was denied, she requested to appear remotely. That was also denied. And her attorney, however, was allowed to appear remotely.
What was the rationale for denying a change in venue, given that she lives in California now?
So they weren't able to get a response from the judge, but a clerk with the Atlanta Immigration Court told her attorney that many changes of venue were unfavorable. However, Daniela has only had one change of venue, and that was from Texas, where she was detained over 20 years ago, to Georgia. Also, we should note that last week, a second change of venue request was approved, so Daniela no longer has to travel to Georgia.
Okay, so it was approved, so it will take place here in California. Mm-hmm. But just bigger picture, is it common for a change of venue request to be denied?
According to the experts I spoke to, it's very uncommon for a request to be denied. But it's also difficult to know if this is a new tactic being used by immigration courts to add more barriers for immigrants to even show up to their cases. The Executive Office for Immigration Review, which oversees immigration courts, issued a memo last year that removed previous guidance on change of venue requests, noting that these requests can be abused by people trying to delay proceedings or seek courts with higher approval ratings. It's possible that the judge in Atlanta was considering this when he decided to deny the change of venue request.
So how do immigration courts work?
Yeah, so Greg Chen with the American Immigration Lawyers Association also says it's important to note that immigration courts operate under the U.S. Department of Justice, not as independent courts, and that recent firings of immigration judges with higher approval ratings could also be influencing judges' decisions.
So they are more influenced by the whims of one administration to the next since they're under the DOJ.
Exactly.
As you were reporting, did you get a sense of how many people are facing similar cases to Daniela's?
So it's really difficult to know exactly how many DACA recipients, or Dreamers as they're often called, are in similar situations. The immigration experts I spoke to told me immigration court data is typically delayed, and that data doesn't specify if any individual is a Dreamer. I reached out to the Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse at Syracuse and the Deportation Data Project at UC Berkeley, which both track immigration court data. However, spokespeople for both confirm that there is no good way of knowing from the data who might be a DACA recipient.
You know, DACA protects individuals from deportation, but as I mentioned, it allows them, you know, to work, to have housing, to go to school. So given all the uncertainty surrounding Daniela's case, has it had an impact in those other parts of her life, like her job?
Yeah, it's had a huge impact, actually. You know, she told me that her employer gave her a choice after learning she could be required to leave for court proceedings or potentially be detained, either resign now or risk being fired and barred from working for the company again.
They also told me that if I were to get detained and I couldn't contact my job, it would be considered job abandonment. So ultimately, if that happened, I wouldn't be eligible for rehire. However, if I resigned, I could be eligible for rehire one day and focus on fighting my case.
I would imagine this has had an impact on her finances.
A tremendous impact. She actually had to drain her savings and her retirement account to pay legal expenses. She even considered selling her car and all of her belongings online, but she avoided doing so because of a GoFundMe that was created to support her.
Okay, so she does have some support from friends and loved ones. But aside from just like the legal logistical road that she faces, not having a job, financial challenges, what is the state of her mental health? I mean, this is just hardship. It's a difficult time to go through.
It's been incredibly hard on her. You know, before all this, she told me her biggest worries were studying for an insurance certification for her finance job, planning her birthday celebration, and even looking for a volleyball league to join. Now she says she cries herself to sleep most nights. And she's also had traumatic flashbacks to being detained as a child and the coldness of the bars in the detention center. And she's also questioned her faith after going through this ordeal. But the news that her second change of venue request was approved and the fact that faith leaders in Sacramento are now rallying behind her is giving her hope. Last week, she spoke during a multi-faith prayer vigil outside of the downtown Sacramento building that houses immigration offices.
Today, at this exact moment, it's probably my first day that I haven't cried since I got that notice. And so thank you for giving me a reason to smile and being here with me.
Yeah, there's still a legal road ahead, though. So what is next for Daniela?
So because her change of venue request was accepted, she now has to wait for a new court date from the Sacramento Immigration Court. And it's unclear how long that will take, given that the court, along with many other courts across the country, has a really big backlog of cases.
Yeah. So it just TBD.
And
yes. And you'll be following that. Before I let you go, Gerardo, you also wrote a version of your article in Spanish as well. You can find that at capradio.org. What did that choice mean for a story like this?
Yes, and I should give credit to our partner station KPBS in San Diego for actually translating the story. They're also working on translating the second in this series of stories following Daniela's case. Daniela was also adamant about wanting the story to be available in both languages to ensure as many people could read it and understand what is happening with DACA recipients at this moment. And I agree, the majority of DACA recipients come from Spanish-speaking countries, and many are likely more comfortable with Spanish.
Gerardo, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Cap Radio reporter Gerardo Zavala is telling us about the story of Daniela Valladares Hernandez, a local DACA recipient whose immigration case was reopened last month. We have links to Gerardo's reporting on Daniela's story in English and Spanish on our Insight page. Up next, we'll learn more about Feather River Park in Yuba County, which was just designated as one of California's three new state parks. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.